You're not sick, Amelia, no.
No?
No, you're a little farsighted.
This is the Farsighted Network.
This is the Farsighted Network.
This is the Farsighted Network.
Thanks for listening.
Enjoy the show. Woo!
Hey, everybody. This is an episode of the Farchive, and as you're aware, this is a feed that I use for just general interviews or anything else like that, and I generally don't do much editing. And that's the case here. I did very little editing, but I wanted to give you a quick introduction. This is Mark Wise. He is a DJ and producer and musician who does some really, really cool stuff. I got to check out his music last year and been following him since, and we got to hook up for a quick interview. So here's a interview with Mark, a couple of his songs, and I really hope you enjoy it. Take care. for anyone listening, can you tell them, you know, kind of what you do and a little bit about your music?
Hey, yeah, I'm Mark Wise. I'm a techno DJ and producer from New Jersey. And the thing that's notable about me is I do a very unique combination of peak time techno and heavy metal techno.
Right. That.
And for folks who might be wondering what heavy metal techno means, it is exactly what it sounds like. You've got techno beats with metal guitars and vocals on top of them.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds like a pretty good description as far as my understanding from listening to your music. You know, when I first was, you know, sent some of your music and checked it out and really dug it. I think there's kind of like fans of things like industrial music will probably find something they like here, because there's definitely a kindred spirit, although it's not the same. And, you know, it's kind of got that that, you know, true 90s techno feel while also having a heavy metal thing going on. I think my first thing that I
I mean, you know, the folks who say that it's, you know, industrial metal, I mean, technically they're not.
Right.
They're not wrong. It's just a really, it's a really hyper specific form sure. of industrial that happens to also be techno. So it's kind of like, you know, it's like if KMFDM didn't have an actual drummer.
Yeah, that's fair. I think the first thing when I first listened to one of your singles, the first time I heard you, which was The Fire Within. I remember immediately thinking it reminded me of one of my favorite remixes of all time, which is the CCN remix of Ace of Spades by, you know, and it has, you know, cause it has that techno beat, but it's still very much got the Motorhead flair, you know? And it reminded me a lot of that. And I think that your sound, you know, for people who like that kind of thing would definitely glom onto what you're doing.
Yeah, and especially comparatively to other people who are doing techno and metal, I have a particularly more classic metal sound to it, whereas a lot of it is like that more modern, like, I don't know if metalcore is the right word, because I don't follow modern metal enough to know if that would be the right term to describe it, but they have a more modern metal sound on the guitars and whereas I, you know, it reminded you of Motorhead, which is a fair comparison. There's clear, you know, like Metallica influence in there. So yeah, if the classic metal is more my vein like that.
So as far as making the music, do you do everything? Do you play guitar? You put in the beats? You do kind of, is it just a one man show?
I am not a good enough guitarist to play any metal. I am a beginner level acoustic player. I can write riffs though and give a guitarist MIDI files, or I can, if I can't figure out the notes that I want, I will just record myself singing it, which is how the chorus of The Fire Within was done. Like I came up with the whole part, but it had those like string bends in it and I couldn't figure out what note to bend up wanted it to bend up to, or how to even convey that in a MIDI file. So I just sang it and we went through a few iterations until we had something that was not exactly what I had thought of, but it was quite something that I thought was an improvement. So and then everything else was like I wrote everything from like the first breakdown through the verses and the chorus. So like I came up with all those guitar parts for that song. And then the intro was something that was from a prior project with the same guitarist, just building a riff library. And then I had him write the bridge and the solo section himself. Lyrics, I came up with like a pretty rough concept, and the singer I hired just ran with it, and he he really impressed the hell out of me. But yeah, I can do all the production side with the beats and all that stuff myself. The guitars and vocals, I need to get other people to do, but I can,
you know,
I can,
you can hear it in your head and you can kind of get them the idea of what you want, but you need someone to kind of put it out there. I get that. It completely makes sense. So,
yeah, and when a lot of riffs I can specifically figure out with a synth and a MIDI keyboard, but not always.
That's fair. And so, so from song to song and project to project, you have different, different artists who contribute.
I have worked with this, well, really, The Fire Within was my first time working with a guitarist and singer doing live guitar and vocals. I've since done two more tracks that are yet to be released. I worked with the same singer again, but a different guitarist. And then the other one I've got coming up, I collaborated with the singer guitarist from industrial band called Noiseside from Paraguay, who I had done a remix of one of their songs. And then I was like, yeah, I would absolutely love to collab with their singer guitarist. They have, their style of industrial metal is already very EDM infused. So when I connected with them, it was like an instant, like, you know, musical connection where it was like, yeah, your stuff and our stuff is very in the same vein. And, when they asked me to do their remix, I immediately, you know, was on board with that. And then naturally I wanted to work with their singer guitarist on a song.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
So I've worked with several different people and one singer I've reused twice.
That makes a lot of sense to me. I, you know, the other thing that drew me to your music is just, the connection that I grew up in North Jersey and you're from Jersey.
Yeah.
So, where are you from? Where in Jersey?
Born and raised. I grew up in North Jersey. I was in Bayonne until kindergarten, then moved to Bergen County, as far north as you can get. In fact, last exit on the Garden State Parkway before you go into New York. And now, after graduate school, I moved out finally from my parents' house. I mean, I had gone to Rutgers for college, so I lived in New Brunswick for 4 years, lived at home for 2 years of grad school, then wound up moving back to New Brunswick because it was near where I got a job, and now I live in Sayreville, which is, for folks who don't know New Jersey, you've probably heard of Staten Island, which is one of the boroughs of New York, and Sayreville is like 20 minutes from Staten Island or so, 15, 20 minutes from Staten Island.
I mean, so I'm from Essex County originally, but, you know, I used to have a lot of friends in Fairlawn, and my dad grew up in Bergen Field, so I'm definitely very familiar with Bergen County. You know, so yeah,
like Bloomfield area.
So like, yeah, little mafia town. You know, like a lot of towns up in that area. You know, I always tell people when they ask, "Oh, where'd you grow up?" I have two standard answers. One is anywhere from 25 minutes to 3.5 hours from Manhattan, depending on traffic. And the other answer is always, have you seen The Sopranos? That's where I grew up. Because honestly, it was always funny in Essex County, they had a ordinance because I was growing up in the heyday of Sopranos when it was actually like, you know, running. And I'm 42. And so with that in mind, you know, it was really funny to me that in our county, they weren't allowed to film on county owned property because they quote unquote, were showing Italian Americans in a negative light. But I always thought it was just because they were giving away too many secrets on TV. So, I don't know, but, I lived across the street from an Italian restaurant, like a swanky Italian restaurant that my family couldn't afford to eat at, but that particular restaurant was a place they used to film a lot of the like the little Italian restaurant scenes that were like nondescript, non-specific Italian restaurants.
Yeah, when it was like just like two
right.
people sitting
eating a,
down
eating a bowl
for
of pasta,
a meal.
You know, that was totally it. And it's funny when I went.
Whenever it was an exposition
they
dinner,
there all the time. It's funny. It's literally like one block across the street from my house. Like I could throw a rock from my house to the place. Yeah.
That's
so it's just
crazy.
It's a funny experience growing up there because like it was a very safe town. Most people didn't mess with each other because you didn't want to, you know, end up with cement shoes in the Hudson, right? So, you know, I totally get that whole vibe. It, you know, it's always funny when I see somebody who grew up in that area. But I grew up really immersed in the punk and hardcore scenes in the 90s. So that was like that was my bread and butter mm-hmm. growing up. And I never had a whole lot of musical talent myself. So my way to be part of the scene was booking shows. So from the time I was 14 until I went away to college, and then I did stuff down in Philly when I went to college. So that was kind of my thing. I used to always book concerts, a lot of random punk bands. And in the 90s, like late 90s, the punk scene was so thriving in North Jersey that like I could book any band and get 200 kids out. Like it was nothing. And man, it's crazy.
You know, I don't remember the name of any of his bands, but you might have known my brother, okay. Joe Pompeo. He was a drummer. He was in punk bands. He was in that scene.
Yeah,
in
I mean,
late 90s,
90% chance that we've met. Maybe more. Yeah.
I mean, if you're 42, you're yeah. the same age as him. He's 41 or 42. So you probably at least encountered my brother.
Yeah, I probably booked bands.
Like, I would actually be shocked. Yeah, I would be shocked if you didn't. If he didn't play in any of your shows, if you were as involved as you say, because he was all in it.
Yeah.
He even ran for a time, like this wasn't until college though, but he ran like a zine for a while.
I ran a couple myself. Yeah.
He had like a zine.
Yep.
Yeah. So he was every bit involved and steeped in that. You probably, hung out.
And that's being crazy. From North Jersey in a very Italian neighborhood, I can't narrow down the number of Pompeos I knew. I knew a few. So there's a good chance. There's a good chance we've met.
Yeah.
So you said you went to grad school. And what's your degree in? I'm just curious.
My degrees are undergrad electrical and computer engineering, and then a master's, an MBA in supply chain management.
Yeah. So the engineering, I kind of lends itself as a creative type who's in engineering. I get where you'd be drawn to things like, you know, creating music on the producing side, which makes a lot of sense. You know, like
there was a time where I thought I wanted to start my own audio company. But then I did not.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably a lot of work, but I'm saying it wouldn't be a fun one. I mean, it could be a fun job. So you're a smarty pants now. So you said you got your master's. I have a master's degree in criminal justice myself. I my day job is working for the Department of Corrections here in Pennsylvania. But I oversee treatment contracts in the community. So I oversee like drug and alcohol treatment and stuff like that. So I'm on a different side of than what people normally think of when they think of, you know, Department of Corrections. I've never worked in the custody realm, although I did work in a jail as a counselor when I started my career. So I started at one of our big jails here and then worked out into community corrections for a little while. And now I'm, like I said, overseeing treatment contracts. So in the greater Philly, Allentown, Scranton, and Reading. That's kind of my zone, the eastern part of the state. So, yeah. So I live in the Philly area now. So, you know, I'm not that far from Jersey. My mom's still in Jersey. My dad moved out a few years ago and moved down by us. But yeah, I'm still connected into Jersey for sure. And Sayreville is a place I definitely know from some music venues that they have down there that I used to frequent years ago. So.
Yes, I'm very close to Starland Ballroom. Not even a 5-minute drive.
Yes, great venue. I mean, I haven't been there in, I think great venue like I know now, but I haven't been there in 20 years, but I know a lot of people who still go up there for shows every now and again for sure. So but I used to be there a decent amount.
If I had if I had any social life that wasn't raving, I probably would have gone to some shows there, but my entire social life is raving.
Okay, so that was your growing up, you were a rave kid.
No, not really. I got into electronic music like super late in high school. I grew up entirely listening to grunge, classic rock, and bits of metal.
Which would explain why those influence your techno grunge music was now.
Grunge was really my main thing. In fact, I'm the rare person who can say they've had a single favorite band for their entire life.
Nirvana. Okay.
From seven or 8 years old, straight through to now, favorite rock band has been Nirvana the entire time.
So how old were you in 94?
Never been supplanted.
When everything went down?
94, I would have been... In fact, I think it was... Well, it was right around my seventh birthday. Or, no, it was... I'm September. He passed in April or spring. So I was like 6 and a half. I didn't know about it yet. It wasn't until, I guess, afterwards, my brother, who is your age, like I said, he made me some mixtapes with all the grunge that he listened to and like the pre-grunge influences like Sonic Youth and the Pixies and stuff. And so I got into all that music really young. And like I said, Nirvana immediately became my favorite band and stayed my favorite band.
That makes sense. And I mean, so I would have been 13, almost 14 when he passed. And so, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, 5-6 years. Like I said, your brother and I are right around the same age. So yeah, I very distinctly remember that. And I was into him. I was into Nirvana for, you know, maybe a year or so before he passed. But yeah, so I definitely remember that situation pretty clearly. And some of my friends who were a little bit older than me, I remember them being like completely tore apart. You know, so it's interesting looking back at it now. Now, one of my favorite bands a few years later, at the time I was really into Sublime, and I got into them. One of the few people that got into them actually just before he passed, because they didn't really break until he passed. But I had gotten a 7-inch album, a 7-inch with that I bought because Wesley Willis was on it, and I love Wesley Willis. Are you familiar with Wesley? Okay, Wesley Willis was he's passed since, but he was a severely schizophrenic and other mentally ill, but just a huge creative, loved to make music. And at the time, he had a band called the Wesley Willis Fiasco, which was like a full punk band that he fronted, and it was crazy. And he was like a 350-pound black dude, just crazy dude. It's so much fun. I saw him live once. And then he then went off when the band couldn't kind of handle how off the deep end he went. They were having a hard time kind of. He decided to do solo stuff, and it was actually just him and a Casio keyboard, and it was 90% just playing the stock backbeats, but it's so much fun. It's goofy music, but he did this this 7-inch with Sublime back when I was in like 8th grade, and I got that, and I got into Sublime from it. I had a song called All You Need off of Robin the Hood, and right after I got really into them, he died. So I was like, oh geez. So that was my Kurt Cobain experience, you know what I mean? Even though I like Kurt, it was I just kind of wanted to, you know, see a little bit more about, you know, what got you into music. And like you said, you got into listening to the techno and stuff late in high school, but what got you into making your own?
Oh, well, I started playing drums. I took a percussion in 5th grade. And so I had I did a bunch of school concert band in high school. My friends and I made a rock band. And for a group of high school kids, we were actually, because we were like the good musicians. We were actually quite good for a high school band, and that was a lot of fun. We wrote a few songs. Good Lord, I wonder if I still have a copy of the one and only song we ever recorded.
So you said what was the sound of that band really? Yeah, like was it like a
we were playing mostly just okay. covers of stuff that we liked. So we played stuff like mm-hmm. Metallica and Sublime, and we played
the popular alternative music and stuff like that. Yeah, that makes sense.
Classic rock and, you know, the music we liked, and we wrote a few originals. I would almost describe a little what we did as like, I guess we were just like a generic sort of hard rock metal.
You were a bar band before you were old enough to be in a bar.
Yeah, and then so it was late high school where I started getting into some electronic music. After I started going to these, you remember the club teen nights? I don't know if they had them in your age, but there were a few clubs, Soundgarden and Lodi.
Club Abyss, I do remember the teen night things they did, yeah.
Yeah, so I those got me into electronic music a little bit. And then I went into college with that taste like really fully blooming, and I started DJing. And then it was after college, my first semester of grad school, I decided to start producing. I was making like electro and Dutch house and progressive house to begin with, until eventually going to the first few years of Electric Zoo Festival was when I first encountered like tech house and techno that I enjoyed. I had heard some of it before, but never enjoyed it. And then that kind of got me into it more once I experienced it live. And eventually it just went full into the techno route. Once I got my manager in 2017, and he encouraged me to like rebrand and under a new name. Cause I wasn't Mark Watt. I was producing under my real name for a while. And that's how Mark Wise came about. And that's when I decided, all right, I'm going to focus on techno entirely.
So you said you got into techno a little bit in late high school with like raves and things. And like, what I'm curious about is, what were some of the acts that got you into techno? Like, what were some of the acts that were really like your first ones that really,
well, the early electronic acts, which they wouldn't even be techno acts, they're just like mainstream dance artists, I guess. It was like there was this guy Lucas Prada, and he was like a local Jersey guy who was like well known in the dance scene, and he would actually come perform, sing his songs live at some of those teen nights. Really the one, and it's actually a specific song, it was David Guetta versus The Egg, Love Don't Let Me Go. That really started my love affair with electronic music as a whole. And then some of the first like techno artists I got into were like Umek and Jay Lumen, who I would actually, Jay, I would say probably if I had to pick one single favorite techno artist of all time, it would be him. He's the one I've most consistently enjoyed over the years in terms of like, you know, the percentage of their songs that I've bought and listened to and played and stuff like that.
That's cool. I David Guetta or Guetta or whatever how you pronounce it, I'm not going to pretend I know the guy very well. He
I've always said Guetta. It could be Guetta, right? But it's French, so we're Americans. We don't pronounce French.
We don't pronounce anything that's not American, right? But even British English we don't pronounce correctly. But that said, he has a song with Kid Cudi that I love. I'm a big Kid Cudi guy. My whole family is actually. It's one of the only artists that my wife, myself, and my two kids all love. Like it's like we all have different tastes in other ways, but like we all love Kid Cudi for some reason. So we've gotten a chance to go see him as a family a couple times. I have two teenage boys, and
You're talking about Memories.
Yeah, and he performed it live, and I didn't really know the song because I don't know a lot of – I honestly just don't know a lot of popular music today other than what my kids play me. And
oh god, I don't know any of it.
But the crowd went nuts. It was clearly a very popular song. But like it was really cool live. And then I've checked out a little bit more of his stuff, and I definitely dig it. But for me, as an old guy, the 90s techno that I was really into, even though I was mostly a punk, as I was a big Prodigy guy. And before, you know, obviously people know their popular stuff. But what really got me into them first was Music for the Jilted Generation, which is just a phenomenal techno album from the 90s that a lot of the songs from appeared on the Hacker soundtrack. And that's what originally got me into kind of that sound. So I definitely have always enjoyed, some of that classic techno, as well as just like, you know, electronic music that I hear. But it's really cool to hear a variation that's a little more my sensibility, a little more rock like yours. And that's kind of, again, it's a little more my sensibility because, yeah, I grew up a punk kid, but I always liked hardcore metal and I always liked that kind of stuff. And even though, like, there aren't a lot of like true classic metal acts that are like in my top 10 bands or anything like that. But like, I've always liked it. It's always that kind of music that when it's on, I listen and enjoy,
Yeah. It's strange that metal is what I wound up combining with my music because among the stuff I listened to, among the rock I grew up with, metal was the smallest portion, you know? It was much more grunge and classic rock that I listened to a lot. And a lot of the metal I listened to, it was like, I guess there are three bands where like I have a bunch of their albums, you know, and everything. And that those three were Metallica, Dream Theater, and Tool. Everyone else, I just have like individual a few songs that I like. I'm not like a super metal aficionado, and yet that's what wound up being what I thought of, and I was like, wow, I could really make this work with dance beats. And shockingly too, the most direct influences that got me to thinking, oh yeah, I can totally take chunky heavy guitar riffs, put them on techno beats and it'll work, they weren't even metal bands or techno artists at all. It was kind of a strange origin, this period of early COVID lockdown. I had like this malaise for several months at least, where I was barely listening to any techno, no motivation to produce anything, watching a ton of YouTube. This one music theory YouTuber named Rick Beato and some like reaction channels, and they exposed me to some influences I don't think I ever would have picked up otherwise. And three of those, more than any other, were that got me the idea of techno and metal in my head. Were, again, you're gonna, one of the first thing to shock you, one pop star, Harry Styles, and then you've got jazz fusion ensemble Snarky Puppy, and then the one that makes more sense is the modern rock duo Royal Blood.
I don't know most of those artists.
Snarky Puppy, Snarky Puppy is they're jazz fusion, so like if you're not like into that and you don't happen to come across them through some other just random means like I did with YouTube reaction channels, there's no reason to know them. I mean, unless you like really follow like the Grammys and stuff, because like they've won like awards and
obviously
like
I know who Harry Styles is, but I don't really know his music. I know him and the Paparazzi and stuff, you know.
As far as pop music goes, I like a bunch of his stuff a lot more than most. One of his songs that a lot of people would consider cheesy, but I like it, is called Watermelon Sugar. It's got a nice little guitar riff in it. He's got a song called Lights Up that I think is just like, there's this one live version that I think is just absolutely beautiful. I listen to it over and over again and not get bored. Royal Blood, though, the rock duo, they had this song Typhoons And whenever I would listen to that one, I would find myself during the chorus shuffle dancing the same way I would dance to house or techno music. And that really solidified it in my head, like, oh, yeah, I can make this work and it'll still be danceable.
I feel like I've heard of them in that I feel like at one point they might have been on Fueled by Ramen Records. Because I used to listen to a lot of their stuff. But I used to listen to a lot of Fueled by Ramen stuff when I was growing up, and I got back into it again, like maybe 10, 15 years ago. And I feel like they had some song on a sampler or something. And I'm going to look. Yep, I'm right. They were on Fueled by Ramen. But yeah, it was right when they first started. So there you go. Back in like 2011 through 2013 or something like that. So, but yeah, there I do know some of the stuff in that era.
Oh, I didn't even know they were around that long.
Yeah, I would say it looks like they didn't put out their first studio album until 2014. So maybe that's when. No, that was already on Warner Brothers. So they must have already been on Warner Brothers by the time they put on a full length. So, yeah, but I they sound, looking at them, they sound like the kind of thing I would probably dig. So I'll have to check them out.
They're really cool because their lead singer is also the bass player, but he uses all of these crazy pedals and effects so that his bass sounds already like it's a guitar and bass in unison. And it's freaking cool. It's just this really cool sound. And like, you can kind of tell it's not really a guitar, but it completely embodies that unison guitar bass type merging, and it's so good. And it's hard to believe that a duo can sound that fucking cool. Fat.
I'll definitely check that out. I like unique bassists. I always have. You know, I mentioned Motorhead earlier, and part of what makes Lemmy so interesting as a bassist is he doesn't play traditional bass lines. He plays kind of like a guitarist. You know, and he plays up higher a lot of times, you know, he plays like a, you know, and it's always been a unique thing. Of course, I have an admitted bias towards Lemmy because he, until the day he died, was, well, he is.
Lemmy is God.
But my wife's uncle and him were like best friends. So I got to hang out with Lemmy.
Wow.
Only really once for any length of time. But I mean, he sent me a wedding gift, you know what I mean? Like, it's that kind of, yeah, so I know. I have some cool stuff from him. He sent me a tour, like a belt buckle he wore on one of their anniversary Ace of Spades tours, that he actually wore the whole thing, and then he sent it to me. It's pretty freaking cool. Good dude. He was he's such a down to earth guy too, because when we got to hang out with him, you know, we just sat and bullshitted with him, and like I, you know, of course drank Jack Daniels with him, which was his poison, and But it was a really good time. But what's funny is that he was an older guy, obviously. And he was actually, my wife's uncle was 20 years his younger. So he was actually closer in age to my wife's grandparents. I mean, they were older than him, but not by a whole lot. And the funny thing was, he and my wife's grandpa really hit it off. Because when we went to see them and got to hang out with him for a couple hours afterwards and stuff, we went with my wife's grandparents. It was hilarious. You know, he's this old man in a sweater vest. All the rockers are having a blast, like yelling and singing with him. It was honestly something I'll never forget. And I have, you know, I have pictures of Lemmy and some autographs. Like I said, we got a wedding gift from him. I mean, it was pretty, so I'll never not, you know, have a special place in my heart for that guy. And besides being a Motorhead fan, I actually love the stuff he did as Headcat. You ever hear any of the Headcat stuff?
No, but I remember that.
Oh yeah, Probot. Yeah, he sang Probot. That awesome he song. Did he the was vocals. Yeah.
He saw. Yeah, man, it's what was favorite, that? I forget what that song it, was called. I gotta look that up.
Yeah.
I gotta look. I think it's the only Probot. Yep. Shake Your Blood. That was an amazing song. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. The Probot.
Headcat was his.
That was yeah.
His classic rock and rockabilly cover band that he did with Slim Jim from the Stray Cats. And it's a cool project. Oh. I mean, if you like, I mean, like, you know, you said you like classic rock, you know, they got some Cream, they got some stuff like that, and they got some old like 50s rock. But like, I mean, their cover of Cream's Crossroads is sick. It's just a
Cream.
Yeah, man. Right.
That
brings
back memories. My friends and I would just make up random lyrics to go with Sunshine of Your Blood, because it's the kind of song where you can just insert any words and somehow they work.
Yeah, that's definitely true. It's one of those songs for sure. So what do you got going on now? You got any more music you're working on, or things, recent tracks people can check out?
Yeah. So I am finishing up a song called Succubus. This is new Peak Time Techno. I just got the vocal work back from this singer. Her name is Salvo. You can look her Salvo songs on Instagram. So I have to, my weekend is going to be working on the mix, you know, to, now that I have the vocals in there, getting everything right with that and the instrumental. And that's coming after I just did a song that's actually based on like this picture that I bought from an artist called, where I took different parts of the image and directly translated them into things in the song, and like trying to like just do one take and just go with exactly what came to my mind sort of thing. So I'm finishing up a new Peak Time Techno EP there. I have music that's going to be coming out next month, already in April, more Peak Time Techno on a label from, I think they're Romanian, called Teoria Perfecta. Those songs, Dagger and Trample, I've played in my podcast a bunch of times. I've been dying to release those. They would have been out end of last year, but the label they were originally going to release on had like a big falling out between the owners and stopped releasing, so I had to find something new, so that it got delayed until now. But that's coming up, and that's going to be awesome, because those are like, I mean, I think my techno metal is my best stuff, but for the non-metal, those two tracks are my absolute best by far that I've made, and I've just been dying to release them, so I'm really excited for that. And I'm also I have two new heavy metal techno songs that I'm just working on getting signed, which one is the collaboration I mentioned with the singer guitarist from the band Noise Side, and then I also did a heavy metal techno version of Benny Benassi's Satisfaction. There is a small clip of that actually already posted on my Instagram in one of my pinned posts, because I used it in the highlight reel from my show in November. So if you want to get a little snippet of that, you can head to @MarkWeisTechno on IG. First pin post has a little clip there. That's actually, that track is mental. I don't think it's as good as The Fire Within musically, although it's a better production because my skills have leveled up, so it sounds better.
You referenced your podcast. Where can people check out your podcast? What's that called?
It's called Techno Babble. It's a monthly podcast. No talking, just like a DJ music mix podcast. It's on YouTube and on SoundCloud. Was originally on YouTube and Mixcloud until Mixcloud changed their policies for free accounts, and so now it's YouTube, SoundCloud.
Gotcha. That makes sense. And I had to look it up because, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, and well, I don't know when you're going to be releasing this, but at the time of this recording, I have a new one coming up. It'll be posted in 2 days.
Well, then it'll probably this is probably going up a day or two after that, because I'm thinking it's going to go up Monday. So people should probably be able to check it.
So if you're listening to this, head to my YouTube or SoundCloud. Check out Technobabble Volume 26. It's my newest mix that's up. And that does have my new collaboration with the singer from Noise Side. His name's Dan Aside. You can get an early listen to that.
When you I had to look up the term peak time techno because I didn't know what that meant. So I just figured
it's basically a term that was invented by Beatport.com, which is the biggest site where DJs buy their music. It was a good, well-intentioned effort to make it easier for people to find the techno that they want, because this, what's come to be known as melodic techno, developed, which is not as much of a boom, 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 boom type sound. It's like in the one, it's like less than 130 BPMs. And as the name implies, there's a lot more melodic intricacy to it.
So they kind of like blending traditional techno with a little bit of ambient stuff and stuff like that, or
more like it's like techno took on some aspects of deep house kind of thing, and like progressive house. So like that kind of came in there, but then you still have this stuff where it is like the boom, 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 but it's also not quite hard techno, which is like quite fast. And so the term Beatport came up with to distinguish like the boom, 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 boom techno that's not quite hard enough to be hard techno, but is definitely too hard, definitely not this melodic techno. They came up with the term peak time techno to describe it. Probably a good way to think of it, though, is it's kind of techno that's really built for festivals. It's like really good festival dance festival music.
It's what I think of as techno. Is what it
that's
is.
Like,
I mean, when you say probably, that, you know, I think you know the classic era of you know the '90s stuff I was into, like my God, Prodigy. Like their classic stuff is definitely that four on the floor beat, you know, boom, 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 boom stuff, you know, without being like, you know, in that hard, you know, super, I don't know, whatever the other terms are, like you were saying. So like, I get it. It's like
hard techno is just like, it's quite fast. I mean, if it's, you know, you're starting at like 140 BPMs and up for hard techno, and 140 for hard techno is like slow for hard techno. Mm-hmm. That's like the very low end. Most of it's like 150 plus. So it's like very fast and aggressive, but for the most part. And that's not, and like peak time is not really quite that, but it's definitely not, you know, so they had to come up with, it was a well-intentioned thing. Peak may not be the best term for it, because obviously you can play any music you want at peak time of a show.
Yeah.
So, but you know, that's basically what it means. It's like,
it makes sense. No, I get it. Like you're saying,
it's probably, if you were to think just the word techno by itself, there's a good chance peak time is what
I think so too. Especially in the way you just described it and what I, you know, was saying, like, but I was just curious, because I was like, maybe some of my listeners besides me don't know what that means, so I should probably, you know, clarify, because I had to look it up too. But yeah, man, I really love your heavy metal techno, and I'm excited for some of your peak time techno that I haven't heard, and I'm pretty stoked to learn that I can stream a podcast to just have some cool techno to check out every couple weeks or whatever, and or monthly, you said, you know, so we'll definitely throw some links in the show notes here too, so people can check that stuff out. So as we kind of wrap up, man,
100%.
Remind everybody your you know, socials and websites and that kind of stuff so they can check you out.
Okay, so all of my socials are Mark Wise Techno, all of them, at Mark Wise Techno on Instagram, facebook.com/MarkWiseTechno, Mark Wise Techno YouTube, Mark Wise Techno SoundCloud, uniform everywhere. Website is not up and running yet, though I do own MarkWiseTechno.com. Cool. Is just not built at this moment. So yeah, I've got that, and on Spotify, Mark Wise, and Apple Music, all the streaming services, whatnot. There are a few services like Apple Music where they have me mixed in with this like guy in his 60s or 70s named Mark Wise who released like one album of folk country.
So if that comes covers, up, you'll know this is not the same
acoustic
guy.
Folk country covers. Not the same guy, but there are some places where we're mixed in, but all of my stuff is so much more popular than anything he's done that my songs will just be all the top most popular ones regardless. I knew about him when I took on the name, but I figured he was irrelevant enough that it wouldn't matter which was correct. Ironically, though, there are some people named Mark Wise in other fields of life who are prominent enough to dominate the search results.
So make sure you throw the word techno in there.
Yeah, that's why I did my branding that way. I'm like, well, there's a physicist who has his own Wikipedia page. I'm probably going to take me a while to overtake him. But if you throw the word techno in there, you're going to get awesome. Me.
Hey, well, Mark, it was good chatting. I hope we talk again soon. I'm excited to hear your new stuff, and don't be a stranger. Definitely make sure you send me that as it comes out, and we will definitely keep checking out what you have in store.